Welcome to Season 2 of our Brave New You Tribe podcast. I'm your host, Lou Hamilton, co-founder with Meredith Heppner-Chapman of Brave New You Apparel. I interview real-life Brave New Girls and guys who have chosen a road less traveled, risen to the challenges, and found the courage to keep going when the going gets tough. They share the lessons they've learned, their wins, and their vision for the future. Brave, bold, and sometimes bloody-minded, they bring you their stories from the edge. This week's guest is Annabelle Muazu, creative director and founder of the brand Ihuoma, luxury lingerie and loungewear created to celebrate the inherent beauty of black women. She also created the brand Beautifully Undressed, an emporium for lingerie lovers, reflecting the desires of real women. Welcome, Annabelle, to Brave New You Tribe. Hi, how are you?
Hello. Lovely to meet you, Lou. We've been trying to do this for, I think, third time lucky, right?
I know, yeah. Well, it's great. I'm really excited. It's a grey, rainy day outside, yeah. But I'm really happy because I've finally got the chance to chat to you. So inside, it's the sun shining.
Oh, bless you. Thank you so much. Well, it's thank you so much for inviting me to participate in your amazing podcast. It's a real honor listening to some of the women that you've had the opportunity to interview. But yeah, it's lovely to chat to you as well. Thank you for inviting me.
I'm really impressed because you have launched your new brand. Let me say it right. Ihuoma.
Okay, let me help you. Nearly there.
Yeah,
it's actually Ihuoma.
Ihuoma,
exactly. Believe me, it was when we were deciding on the name, because it was originally my name, as in it is my name, but it was originally Annabelle Muazu Intimates. And then when I had a chat to the amazing team that helped me do my branding, they said, look, your name is lovely, but it's too long. It's too long. And at the back of my head, I did know that it was going to change. I just didn't know what it was going to change to. And it was my beautiful daughter, Aisha, who said, Mama, your second name is so beautiful. And it's so in keeping with, you know, what the brand is about, the ethos. And on top of it, it was Babaji, her grandfather, who's a mother who named me that. And Ihuoma means fortunate. And it's I'm originally from Nigeria, so it's from the Igbo tribe. And it means fortunate, favored, abundant. And it was very much what I believe the brand is about because, you know, it's a very uplifting, positive, well, uplifting brand as far as I'm concerned. That's what I wanted to get across. So yeah, Ihuoma is how it's pronounced. A difficult one, but yeah, hopefully it'll start to run across people's tongues easily as we get more established.
And what a lovely name for a brand that is launched in the middle of a pandemic. What a bright light it brings.
Yeah, it probably makes sense actually at the time when we decided this was not happening. The world that we're living in was not even a fiction of one's imagination. So I'm hoping that it resonates in a way that it is exactly that, uplifting and positive for people. So yeah.
And how was the launch? Had you planned for it to happen? It was September, wasn't it?
We launched on September the 27th. And oh my gosh, how can I explain this? I'm very much somebody that, you know, having done a lot of pressured things in my life, with this project, I wanted to come from it from a different angle. I wanted it to be as beautiful as it could be from start to finish, even with all the challenges that I knew that were going to definitely take place. But I just didn't want to put any pressure on myself. So it's always good to have a timeline, and we had the timeline and set it up and everything, but we overshot it by over a year when I just realized just how difficult it is to established your own lingerie collection, especially when you have a very exacting standards about what you want to get out of it. So the process took a lot longer. But as I said, I was like, well, okay, that's the way it's going to be. I'm not going to stress myself about something that actually, I just didn't want to put any negative energy into it in any way, shape, or form. So I was just told, I just told myself that the universe would tell me when is the right time to launch, and when is the right time it would. So I just kind of did my thing, trickled along every time, just adding to it, improving it. And I think the big thing was when I decided to launch on Instagram. And again, it was a very slow thing until I started showing a little bit more of the collection when we got the samples through, and then we got picked up by Black Owned Everything, and it blew out of control. Literally overnight, got about 2,000 followers from literally nothing. And the response was so wonderful, so positive, and so, for me, so an acknowledgement this was something that was needed for Black women, for women of colour, for all women, actually, because I think lingerie, whilst I am focusing on Black women, it is for all women. It's about empowering women. So I think it was after we did our shoot, our amazing shoot with a beautiful four women, that I just thought, okay, it's time. And even then I wasn't ready. We were still working on the website, because myself and my daughter, we designed the website. So we were still working on the website up until the last 10 minutes. And my daughter Aisha said, "Mom, just press the button. And if you don't press the button, I'm going to." We can always fix things up later on. But people are ready. And wow, were they ready? Because literally, as soon as I pressed the button, 5 minutes later, first orders started coming through. And I was like, okay, now it's scary, because now you've got to fulfill these orders. But yeah, we launched on the 27th. Long story short, we launched on the 27th of September, and it's been a wonderful nearly 8 weeks now. And each day is a learning curve, and each day I'm just so grateful that I'm doing something I love. So
you talked about the shoot, and the photographs are stunning. Can you describe them for the listeners, what they look like and what is in the images, but also how you came up with the ideas for them? Because they are so beautiful and powerful.
Yeah, they are. The funny thing was that the original plan, again, this is when you realize that you can't plan anything when you know, it was that we were going to shoot in Morocco. I was going to shoot in Morocco. I'd have no budget, but in my head, I'd found a location. I'd even spoken to the hotel. I'd found a photographer in Morocco to save expenses, taking over a photographer. And it was Morocco. Nowhere am I going. I'm going to go to Marrakesh and that's it. Even spoke to Alicia, the beautiful pregnant lady in the shoot. She wasn't pregnant at the time. She was not pregnant at the time. She was like, yeah, I'm up for it, you know, doing it.
She's properly pregnant in the pictures, isn't she?
Exactly.
And you hadn't planned that.
Not planned in any way, shape or form. So this was, I would say, about this time last year, we started talking about Marrakesh. And then obviously everything happened. Beginning of the year, I suddenly realized it was just not going to happen. So again, let it go. Trust the universe. And then I have this... She's a dear friend now, a beautiful, beautiful dear friend. She's a model that I've worked with before. So I've done a couple of shoots with Katrina, and Katrina had decided, she's so multi-talented. She started doing photography, and I was telling her about the nightmare I was having with, you know, shooting. She said, "Well, I'll do it for you, Annabelle. Let's do something together. You know, I love what you're doing, and you know, I want to be able to give back." And you know, and her images are stunning. Her beauty, her photographer is beautiful. I always tease her. I said, "Is there anything that you can't do, woman? It's just ridiculous." We come off lockdown, but we also knew that we had to be careful, and had no budget, as I said, to hire a studio. And she's like, "Look, let's just do it outside. Let's find a beautiful location. I know the perfect place near Hampstead. Let's just do it." So I then reached out to the wonderful Alicia and said, "Alicia, darling, we're going to do the shoot now, and you know, would love to still have you part of it." And she said, "Slight problem." I said, "What? What are you talking?" And she said, "I'm pregnant." So So in that moment, I just was like, this is so magical. This is just beautiful. This is exactly, I mean, our collection is called Divine Feminine. And how, what is more divine feminine than a pregnant woman? And I said, look, it doesn't matter. I want you there. And so it was Alicia, beautiful Katrina as a photographer, who's also pregnant, So the feminine energy was just on fire. Myself and my beautiful daughter, so as the second model. And so we went up to Hampstead, beautiful. And we went to different areas in the park. There's a beautiful pagoda area with lots of plinth, you know, pillars, just gorgeous. And the idea from Morocco was about just showing women as goddesses. That was the plan I had initially. It was to be on the, you know, on the sun, sand dunes and just be ethereal and goddesses. The energy was beautiful. It was a gorgeous, beautiful sunny day in London. And how beautiful is London when it's hot and sunny? It was just glorious. And yes, we have these beautiful queens or goddesses, literally black goddesses in Greek pantheon. That's the way I kind of look at it. We had crowns as well and lots of beautiful flowers. And it was so difficult because at every point people would come by, like we had an audience at some stage, you know, because it's like, and this I have to say was my daughter's first shoot. So she was incredible. I mean, I'm in awe of her, but she really was incredible, took it in her stride. And of course, two pregnant women on fire. It was just magical. It couldn't have been more perfect. And that's really resonated in the images that you can see on in the campaign. I didn't even want to do any stock kind of ghost shots because I just thought, no, we can't not have every single image. We can't just really show what this collection is about.
And what's lovely is that you as a mother, your daughter and a nearly
a new mother.
She's pregnant. She's showing her pregnant belly.
And how beautiful is she? How beautiful. And I think this is the thing also that I loved about it is that there's this misconception that because you're pregnant that you can't still feel sexy and sensual and beautiful. And she just embodied that. I mean, Alicia is absolutely stunning anyway. But as a pregnant woman, I'm like, oh, my God, this is just exquisite. And yeah, it was incredibly magical. And I wasn't planning to shoot. I wasn't planning to be in the photographs, but Katrina and the girls were like, no, you have to. Because none of the samples fit me. Yeah, they were fitted on Aisha, who also happened to be Alicia's size. And even then, because Alicia was pregnant, she couldn't wear everything. But yeah, in the end, I managed to fit into the long line bra and, of course, the kimono. You can't go wrong with the kimono. And it was just the most beautiful, beautiful, powerful moment just to be. I've never done a shoot before. So in itself, I was like, okay, I get it. But the last shot, the main shot of the three of us outside together, it was just divine. It really was divine.
It gives me goosebumps even thinking about it. And so the women that have been buying the laundry, you know, you were all different sizes, the three of you. You're saying it's for predominantly for black women, but really for all women. And is that for sort of all women's sizes as well?
Yes. I mean, first of all, yeah. Ihioma is really a luxury brand that celebrates the beauty of the modern black woman. That is what I wanted to put up. Because I just, being in the industry for a little bit of time, I just didn't see anybody doing that. There were loads of wonderful brands, and they've actually in recent times been some really great brands that are focused in on the darker nude tones and the hues and doing great things. But there was just nothing on the luxury end. On the luxury level, and having spent so much time with just these beautiful brands that are working with exquisite fabrics and doing beautiful, you know, silks and embroideries, I just thought, why is there anything that doesn't actually specifically cater to the darker nude tone? So, and I wanted something that was really, for my daughter, I wanted something that she could look at and just say, you know what, that's for me. You know, that's for me. And I know that when I put it on, it's going to fit my skin tone. It's going to speak to me in terms of the iconography that I use in the embroidery, in terms of the colorways that are used. But I have to, and it means that I'm completely unapologetic about being who I am as a Black woman, as a woman of color. But I really want to put across that it's not exclusive to us. It's an inclusive, because it's for Black women, it means that it's an inclusive brand. So, you know, I really want to put that across. And in terms of the people that are buying it, that's been reflected in our customers so far. It's been down the middle, which is wonderful and which is great, because then I mean, it means that people get what I'm trying to do. Size-wise, we're a small brand, and it's the one question that I've had to deal with on a regular basis. It's like, oh, we love your lingerie, but you don't do anything in the bigger sizes. And darker women, we do tend to have bigger busts and a bit more, you know, more curvaceous, and we get all that, although that's kind of changing anyway. It's across the board now. But I think as a small brand, I had to make a decision based on what I had with my budget. And it's just easier to start with a certain template and then work your way up from there, and which is definitely the plan. I mean, as it is, we go up to, our knickers go up to about a size 16 to 18, depending on what you, you know, which style it is. Not all of them do, but they do. And our bra sizes, I do believe we go up to an F cup, a 36 F cup. So we're trying to, you know, get in as much as the as we can in terms of the most common sizes. However, we also have a bespoke service. So, and that's the wonderful thing about working with a smaller team of seamstresses and who are local, is that they are able to do things on a bespoke level. It will be an additional cost because we have to buy extra, you know, bigger wires, we have to use more fabrics, et cetera, et cetera. But that is something that we can offer right now. And as we get bigger, then we'll be able to offer more sizes as standard. But then also, I always say to people, there are also some great Black-owned and non-Black-owned brands that are doing specifically luxury lingerie for bigger busts as well. So I always, whenever somebody questions it, I always say, why don't you try them? Why don't you try, you know, Blue Rain or Zaria Intimates or Harlow and Fox? They're all there. They're doing beautiful, beautiful pieces. I think there's space for all of us, and there's only a certain amount that one can do when you're just starting up. But it's something that I'm acutely aware of, and we'll address when we are in a position to.
So talk to me about laundry as a concept. So thinking about somebody who might be sort of very unconfident in themselves or not feel that they deserve to wear lingerie, or haven't kind of stepped into that realm, or think that lingerie is for to wear for other people. Talk to me about the kind of the concept of lingerie being about giving yourself a sense of self-worth.
From my point of view, I don't know if it says anything about me, but for as long as I can remember, I've always loved it. I remember buying, I think 16 years old, my first La Perla bra and hiding it from my mom, because first of all, what is a 16-year-old doing, you know, doing with that kind of money? I saved and saved and saved, but I always had a sense of wanting to love myself, love my body, and because of when I was brought up, and at the time that you were brought up, you just didn't see images of Black women in lingerie, and coming from
or at all,
exactly. And you didn't really see, and also coming from the way I was brought up, it was not something that you really did talk about, your sexuality or anything like that, or how to feel empowered, for want of a better word. I mean, it wasn't even a concept then, to be honest. So, but for some reason, for me, I just felt that I had this desire. It was almost a spiritual thing that I felt that I wanted to know my body and appreciate my body more. And I really do feel that for me personally, I can be wearing, which I am now, standard jumper and jeans, but if I'm wearing something, a beautiful bra or, you know, a really lovely fitting bra, or lovely fitting knicker, I just feel as if I can take on the world. It's me. I'm treating my body well. I think it's the most important, it's the closest thing that you wear to your skin. So in reverence of this vessel that we've been blessed with, surely we should be only putting the best on it, and then everything else can kind of fall into place. And I just kind of feel as if you're wearing something that makes you feel good, then you're able to tackle anything in the world. And that's how I felt. You know, I didn't really spend much time in the corporate world. I realized the little time that I did have in the corporate world that it just wasn't for me. But I always made a point of making sure I was wearing my best lingerie. I would spend my money on my lingerie just to be able to deal with the rubbish that I knew I would have to deal with coming from men, sorry, shall I say. So it just gives, it's like armor for me. And that's what I want. I really believe it is. It's personal armor. It's beautiful armor. It's armor that makes you feel good. And it's not about making somebody else feel good. It's actually seeing if your partner or your husband sees it and feels good from it. It's a bonus. You know, you're lucky that you see me looking this amazing, because I know I look amazing. And that is what I want, how I want women to feel when they put on my lingerie. This is because that's how I felt when I put on certain brands. It was like, okay, I really can take on the world and it doesn't matter. And I believe, you know, especially when we're growing up in times whereby there's just so many challenges in the world. I just think about my daughter and who's just turned 20, and the world that she lives in is completely different to what, you know, how we lived in. And I just feel as if having something that's yours that can make you feel better about the challenges that we are bombarded with from the moment you wake up on the phone, you're straight away bombarded with negativity. On a personal level, if you can have something that's yours that just makes you feel that you're a queen, then embody it, you know, put it on. And that's what I want. That's why I created the collection. That's why I created the embroidery, which is developed around the Ankh symbol, which is about the power of the feminine divine and the masculine divine. You know, it really is about embodying your sensuality, being free in your spirit, being, you know, recognizing that actually this world that we live in is a blessing and you are part of that. So I want it to be almost like a spiritual experience. I don't know. It's a weird concept. And I know people, I have a friend of mine that just says to me, oh, I only wear black knickers. And I just don't get that concept. I'm like, why? Why do you just, you know, I don't, she would say to me, I don't understand lingerie. I don't get it. And like, I appreciate that some people, you know, it's just practical, put it on, whatever. But I think people just need to be educated, because it is more about a feeling. It's about making yourself feel better rather than trying to make somebody else feel better. That's what I think.
It's almost like honoring yourself, isn't it?
And you absolutely, that is exactly it. I think it is about honoring yourself. And, you know, the one person, one thing that you have to count on and look after, and it's something that I tell my daughter, is that wake up in the morning and look at yourself and tell yourself how beautiful you are. You are beautiful. And we should all be doing that. And if we adorn ourselves with things that make us feel even more beautiful, oh my God, we can deal with everything in the world. We really, really can. And it is about honoring ourselves. You know, it really, really is.
And it's not that you have to have a perfect body to wear lingerie either.
No, not at all.
It's about
how it makes you feel.
That sort of secret knowledge when you're wearing something special, and you've done that for yourself. You've honored yourself. You're celebrating your body in whatever shape or form it comes by wearing beautiful lingerie. You feel $1 million, and you know, you do feel like you can kind of walk out and head held high and take on the world.
Yeah,
and it's that sort of secret weapon.
Yeah, it is absolutely a secret weapon. That's how I see it. It should make you feel good. Everything that you do in life should make you feel good. If it doesn't feel right, then if it doesn't sit well with your spirit, then there's a problem. You know, and I realize that that's a very very easygoing, you know, fairy tale kind of way of looking at things. But I really do believe that it doesn't have to be that difficult. It can be that easy. You can actually navigate the world by trying to do things that actually lift your spirit. And then if you do, then you're always going to be on that level. You're going to attract that kind of person. You're going to work within that kind of field. You're going to patronize that kind of brand, because that's the way you feel anyway about life. So, and lingerie really does that for me.
If, like you, when you were 16, you couldn't afford a sort of luxury brand, but you decided you were going to save up. And so someone who maybe doesn't have very much money, but wants to kind of dip their toes into lingerie, luxury lingerie, what advice would you give to them?
I mean, for me, it was aspirational. I think, you know, there is something to be said about aspiring towards something that you want. And for me, knowing that I'd saved my pennies, my pocket money or whatever, to get something that I still have. I still have it. That's the quality of buying a luxury piece. And this is an argument. This is something that I've had to deal with a lot as a luxury, Black-owned, focused on Black women. If people always say to me, your pieces are too expensive. I was like, they're not expensive. We deserve, I think, because we've been conditioned to think that we can only buy to a certain level. And we've been conditioned to think that we should just be able to pick up something for less than £20. The ethics behind that. And, you know, for me, especially working in the, finding out the intricacies. I mean, I have an idea about designing, but I don't know how to make a piece of lingerie. I'll admit it. I'm working with an amazing team. But when you realize the number of components that goes into one bra, and the work that goes into producing that bra, how can you physically, for me, it just doesn't seem right to pop in and buy a bra for £5. What is that person earning on the other side for a retailer to purchase, you know, to sell something for £5? It just doesn't make sense to me. And psychologically, you as a buyer who's buying that item for £5, you're not going to love it. You're not going to look after it. You're not going to cherish it. It's exactly throwaway. It's fast fashion. And I have an issue with fast fashion anyway. It really is something that troubles me. And for me, again, coming from a generation where we make and mend and we look after what we have. I think it's really, really important, especially, you know, the way the world is and how we're impacting our earth, that we need to rethink these things. And if it means that you save up for, you know, 6 months for that bra that you know that you will have for 20 years. And every time you put it on, even if you just wear it once a month, makes you feel like a queen, then it's worth it. You know, I would just advise whatever you're doing, you know, maybe instead of buying that coffee, that Costa coffee, because they don't need your money anymore, put that £3 towards, you know, a little, you know, piggy bank, if you, people still do things like that. And before you know it, you know, you'll have your £100 or £80 or whatever. And the joy you have when you purchase something that you know is going to uplift you. I get that it's a tricky situation because we are living in difficult times and, you know, people's budgets are restrained. But, you know, even within that, you know, we deserve to treat ourselves. And the one thing that you should be treating yourself with is your body. And I just, you know, for women especially, lingerie is the way to go.
We've spent pretty much 9 months so far in the pandemic in our kind of
pajamas. Yeah. I made an effort for you today, Lou. But as I said, I'm wearing some lovely lingerie.
And that's exactly right, isn't it? So, yeah, we're not going out. We're not partying. We're not going out for meals. But hanging around the house and doing our Zooms, we can still be sitting in our beautiful laundry.
Absolutely.
And even if you have one piece, one thing that makes you feel good.
Yeah, if I treated myself to some lingerie, I will put it on. I'll put on some music. I'll dance. I'll put the incense on. And it's just so empowering. And yeah, do it. Make yourself feel good.
And as you're talking about the work and the creativity that's gone into making each piece, I mean, you're really wearing a work of art, aren't you?
Absolutely.
So I'd like to go back to kind of where it all started, really, and so many layers to what you do. But I'm particularly interested in the fact you studied art and archaeology, is that right?
Yes.
And then you created a platform, Coco Arts?
Yeah, so yes, I started art and archaeology at the School of Oriental and African Studies, London University, one of the great institutions of this in the UK, in London. And then actually prior to that, after graduating, I did my master's and specialized in contemporary African art. And then I worked for an organization called, of course, giving away my age, but I worked for a big festival called Africa 95. And I was one of the founding members in the sense that, you know, I assisted the curator at the time when we traveled. We worked together on putting together this huge program, which was done with a number of institutions in the UK, just really a big celebration of art on all levels. So not just visual arts, it was dance, it was theatre, it was music, it was everything. It was really quite something. And after Africa 95, I decided that I didn't want to work with anybody again and I wanted to set something up on my own. I just thought, nah, I can't do this anymore. God, I'm such a rebel. It's so bad. Anyway, yeah, so I decided to set up my own, at the time, it was quite ahead of my time, my own online gallery, which is Coco Arts, because I'd met just amazing artists along the way, primarily from Nigeria and from Ghana and mostly from West Africa. And the idea was to, you know, do these, to sell their work via, you know, the website and to do art fairs and just to do exhibitions as much as I could. But that was the commercial side of things, which is, I realized that for me, the commercial world was going to be a challenge with Coco Arts. So I then started to do more exhibitions that were more about showcasing the artists and promoting the artists. So I had a number of exhibitions here in the UK and Nigeria. I worked with the Brunei Gallery and my first exhibition was called Accident and Design, and I'm focusing on the artists from the Zaria School of Art in Nigeria. And I brought over about 15 artists from Nigeria and it was held at the Brunei Gallery. And it was still one of the exhibitions that they still talk about. And then I followed that up with my dear friend, Obi Okibo, exhibition, which is called Tapping Into the Known, again at the Brunei Gallery, and which was really a celebration of her meeting of her late father, who was the great poet Christopher Okibo, Nigerian poet called Christopher Okibo, who died during the Biafran War, but is still seen as one of the most magnificent poets of African poets of our time. And she was very young when he passed away. In fact, she was 3 years old when he passed away. So she never knew him, but she found as she got older that she found him through her art. So yes, for me, it was really about trying to showcase as many of the amazing artists that I had the opportunity to work with. It wasn't about making money. It was really about giving these African artists a platform. But my biggest exhibition was an exhibition that I did in Dubai, which was, I went to Dubai, I think it was 2 years before my actual exhibition, which was a series of exhibitions between 2011 and 2012, which I did with a great gallery in Dubai, realizing that there was no platform for African artists in the UAE. So Annabelle decided that she wouldn't go ahead and do it. Oh dear, the things that I did. So yeah, I did that, which was incredibly successful. And I loved it, but it drained me. it really drained me because it became more about the commercial side than about a platform for artists to showcase art, African artists in a region that had never didn't know anything about African art. On the plus side, I was part, one of the big pieces was an artwork by the Ghanaian artist called Ellen Atsui, which, because we couldn't, we ended up selling at Bonhams, and it was at the time the highest selling artwork, African artwork, at auction. So I like to think that, you know, I was part of that team that made that happen. But as I said, after that exhibition, I was burnt out, and I just needed to take a break from the art world. It didn't sit well with me. I just felt it was very fake. I couldn't be myself. I couldn't really showcase the artist the way I wanted to. And it just became about money, as often these things do.
And probably you were ahead of your time. Whereas now, you know, the idea of sort of online art, there are loads of companies doing that.
Yeah.
And, you know, artists are more comfortable with the idea of selling their work online.
Yes.
And buyers are more comfortable with buying something that they never actually get to see in the flesh. I mean, I've sold pieces to the States. And you're kind of waiting. I think they have a kind of a 2 or 3 week period where they have the piece in their house before they decide to send it back. And, you know, you're kind of waiting, oh my God,
no.
The cost of crating it and all of that stuff.
I know.
But I think, you know, it's become more, people have become more comfortable with that concept.
Absolutely. And at that time, there was literally, I mean, I remember people have to call me to give their credit card details. And I was so nervous about that. I'm beginning to find that in terms of the art world, I've been, not to blow my own trumpet, but I've kind of been ahead of the time a lot of the time. And I remember when I made the decision to leave the art world, and my brother, who's like my advisor, and I absolutely love him, and he's a lawyer, just keep this in mind. He was like, what? Why? You've just done the most successful exhibition. Why are you leaving it now to sell lingerie? I was like, no, I can't do it. I need to do something that I'd lost the passion for it. And I'm very much somebody that goes with my gut and what I have to feel passionate about something. So I started up Beautifully Undressed.
That is quite a leap, isn't it, from art to, well.
It depends on how you look at these things. It's the same thing. I just segued a little bit more.
Yeah. And it's, know, as we said earlier, it's art that you wear.
Yeah, absolutely. And it should be art that you wear. So, yeah.
What is Beautifully Undressed?
Yeah, so it's Beautifully Undressed was it's a multi-brand again online retail platform. I have a number of amazing UK and some international small boutique brands on the platform. I made a decision that I didn't want to go down the commercial route. I wanted to work with smaller brands, luxurious brands, working with beautiful fabrics, creating unique pieces. Again, you know, unique pieces that are going to empower women. And so, yeah, I started Beautifully Undressed, I think it was 2013. Yeah, 2013. Yeah, and it was based on having spent that much time on Beautifully Undressed, going to all the trade shows, getting to know the brands as well, getting to know the women, majority women behind the brands, and just really being in awe of what they're achieving. And it's hard. It's a really challenging industry. But I found that the women that I resonated to, the brands that I resonated towards, just tend to be women that are just doing amazing things. And that struck a chord with me.
And so was that what lured you into thinking, I actually need to be doing this myself?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the 16-year-old girl who bought the Perla bra also wanted in her lifetime, daydreamed about being a designer, not realizing it would be a lingerie design, but I kind of, oh, maybe I could be a designer, and I do love fashion. But yes, it was spending time, going to the trade shows, spending time with these brands, seeing the quality of the products that I just thought, you know, I think the aim was always to do that. I think the aim was always to develop my own collection, but I was I didn't feel that I was equipped enough yet to really, you know, take it on board. But then as time went along, I realized that there was this really big hole in the market and did my research. And even in terms of, I remember when I set up Beautifully Undressed, I made it quite clear that I was going to do my own shoots and I was going to use black models because you just didn't see it. I'd go to the trade shows and I'd literally be, there'd probably be a handful of us, you know, either buyers or actual brands trying to sell their products. You could probably count the number of black people that you see at these shows. You just wouldn't see it. And I was like, what's going on? And then the material that you get, you know, in terms of imagery, you didn't see any black women. You didn't see any, you know, anybody of any other race. So I just thought, why is that? You know, it was just frustrating me. And at the time, I also wanted, when I set up Beautifully Undressed, my agenda was also to sell to the African market. And I was like, you know, you need to see the lingerie on your skin. So I remember the first shoot I ever did was in Marbella, and I used a black model with an afro, and I used my white model, but, you know, there was the black model as well. And I remember it being picked up by one of the big lingerie bloggers, who also happens to be black, the lingerie addict, Cora. And she was like, oh, wow, it's amazing to see a you know, lookbook with a black model. I was like, it's a shame that that's the way it is. So as much as possible, whenever I was in a position to do my own shoot, because shoots are expensive, I always made sure there was a black model. And so, as you can see, it's all starting to add up when I decided to do Ihioma, as well as wanting to create something for myself and for my daughter. It was also about empowering black women, because up until then, there's been nothing for us. And yeah, that's how we ended up with where we are now.
So what were black women wearing then? Were they wearing underwear that wasn't their skin tone?
Yeah, exactly. I think it was only, I'm sure you probably heard of the brand Nubian Skin. Ade launched Nubian Skin, I can't remember, about 5 years ago. And she's been incredibly successful, because it's like, why has there not been this? You know, you'd go to, you know, the standard, dare I say, you know, Marks and Spencer's of this world, and you don't find new skin tone lingerie that fitted your own skin. How bizarre is that? You know, I remember buying tights.
There's only one tone.
It's just bizarre. I mean, even white people, they're different tones than white people. So what's that all about? You know, it was just like,
Who is that colour?
Exactly. What is that colour? What is that colour? Please tell me, explain. What do you mean by flesh tone? What do you mean? So it was just bizarre. I remember buying tights and brown tights, so you just look like grey, ashy. Like, what's going on? So, you know, there have been brands like Nubian Skin. There's I can't remember the name of the tights company, but again, and it's changing, and that's wonderful that it's changing. Even the mainstream brands, I mean, you can walk into Marks and Spencer's now and buy dark skin toned, and finally, and as it should be, why is it taking this long? But at least we're there. But in terms of luxurious fabrics, you know, there's nothing. I haven't seen it anyway that's been focused in on, you know, highlighting the darker nude tone, women of color. So that was for me, it had to be that. You know, I remember my mom saying, are you sure it's a good idea? You know, you don't want to alienate your market. I was like, well, no, I'm not. I think it's about time. It's needed. And boy, is it really needed. I mean, with everything that's happened in 2020, it really has shone a spotlight on the disparity in the world. And it has to, and the world has changed for sure. I really do believe that. And hopefully for the better. I'm certainly not going to compromise about on who I am and what I expect for myself. And just because I'm pro-black doesn't mean I'm anti-white. It's far from it. It's about just acknowledging that, you know, up until now, black women, we've been so marginalized, so disrespected in all fields. And I wanted us to feel beautiful. I want us to feel beautiful. I want us to feel unique, because that's how I came up with the word divine feminine. We are the epitome of divine feminine. And I just wanted to make sure that there's something for us in that field. But again, as I said, it's not exclusive. It's only, you know, we're an inclusive brand.
I always ask my guests about courage. And when we're talking about lingerie and what you're doing and what you're providing and who you're providing for, I mean, there's the courage on so many different levels. Mm. A, to sort of take the concept of lingerie into a different realm, providing for people who haven't been provided for before. For the wearer, there takes courage to say, yes, I'm worth it, to say, yes, I'm going to put this money aside and I'm going to save up for something that makes me feel amazing. So how do you define courage, both in your life and in your work?
Feel the fear and do it anyway. It's been a quote that I have kept with me from very, very young. I remember buying the book.
I know. It was my first self-help book.
Yeah, it was myself. Yeah, in my early 20s, trying to figure myself out. Feel the fear and do it anyway. And I have to also say that I was very blessed with my parents. For Nigerian parents, I had parents that allowed me to be me. My dad was very much, bless his soul, was very much one that said, look, you know, you can achieve anything in this world. Don't let anybody tell you that you are not capable of achieving anything you want in this world. I remember my headmistress at secondary school calling my dad in and saying, oh, don't, you know, Annabelle shouldn't bother doing A-levels because she'll never get into university. And my dad coming to me and saying, don't you ever allow anybody to talk to you like that. I mean, he told her in front of her face, how dare you? My daughter is not only she's going to get into university, she's going to get a degree and she's going to get a master's. And he turned to me and he said, when you do, Annabelle, you make sure you tell her, you send her a postcard every time. Hi, Mrs. Hume, you know that degree you said I wasn't going to get? I got it. So I came from that. I came from that sensibility of, look, you can do anything. But having said that, in an ironic kind of way, I got that bolster from my dad. I'm very, very much being somebody that's gotten my confidence from other people. I don't know how to explain that. That's another situation altogether. But it's at this time in my life that I've now started to feel confident about Annabelle and generally look at myself in the mirror and say, not just say it on superficial level, but Annabelle, you are deserving. You are worthy. You are beautiful. Be brave. Don't be scared. Don't be intimidated by anybody. Trust your gut. That is the one thing I tell my daughter every time. I say, you know the answer. Just talk to yourself. You know, I think as women, we have this innate intuition anyway, but we just ignore it, whether it's societal pressures or whether the things that we're told that we're supposed to do or religious, whatever. But we know the answer. We know what our body tells us what is right. And so for me, I always tell myself, if I believe in something, if something is telling you to do something, go for it. Don't be, ignore the naysayers, because there'll always be naysayers. Even ignore yourself sometimes, because there's always going to be that side of you, the left side of you, that's going, you can't do it. But listen to your heart, trust your gut, believe in yourself. Have the courage to actually step out of your comfort zone. Because on the other side of your comfort zone could actually be your dreams fulfilled. And yesterday, as I wrapped my packages, hand-wrapped my packages of orders, because I'd finally got in the orders from the ladies that had made, because everything is handmade, and they sent through a whole load yesterday. And as I looked at them and I inspected them and looked at this amazing work that had gone into something that was an idea. I remember sitting down in this living room with my daughter and my dear friend, Buki Akib, who's also an artist. And she was like, get it out of your head, Annabelle. Write down exactly what you want. Aisha's here to help you draw. Let's draw the ideas. 3 years ago, I remember drawing it and just thinking, how is this going to happen? And remembering, don't worry about the how. Just work in your purpose. Don't worry about the how. Just work in your purpose. Believe in yourself, work in your purpose. And yesterday, I sat down and I packed. I even did the YouTube, checked the YouTube to do a bow properly on a box. Packed these orders and the goosebumps. And I've never felt that. I believe me, I've done some great things in my life, but there's nothing like having your own. You're an artist. You get it. You know, there's nothing like creating your own thing. And so doing that and just thinking, wow, there's something to be said about feeling the fear and doing it anyway. So, yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Annabelle, for showing us it is possible to build, well, multiple businesses over time, but particularly ones that reflect your full self, your true self, that honor who you are and where you've come from, and being able to give that to other people through the laundry that you create. So thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show, and I'm going to buy one of your pieces.
Yay! Oh, Lou, this has been the most magical hour. I've enjoyed every second. I literally do feel as if I've been chatting to my best friend. So thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you, and see you soon.
Definitely. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Thank you so much, Annabelle, for showing us that it is possible to build multiple businesses that reflect your full self with all its creative and entrepreneurial courage. You can find out more about Annabelle's work on www.annabellemuazu.com and follow her on Instagram at Annabelle Muazu. Thanks also to Podstar PR for producing the series, and to you, our tribe, for listening. Download, rate, and review on your podcast provider so that we can keep bringing you this free podcast. Goodbye for now, and see you next time.